the latest technology,
the perfect must-have for every golfer,
the coolest trends,
oh, gnarly,
insight from the hottest talent and industry insiders.
Sometimes par is good enough to win.
The South Shore's only golf show on the radio. This is Goldie Belt's Golf Live.
It's in the hole.
Here's your host, Liza Churchill.
Welcome to Goldie Bounce Golf. I'm your host, Liza Churchill. We're coming to you live from the lovely South Shore studios of 95.9 WATD. We have some quick PGA Tour news. The PGA Tour Kodak Challenge wrapped up today down at Disney's Magnolia Course. There was a three-way tie involving Troy Merritt, Ricky Fowler, and Aaron Baddeley. And Troy Merritt won in the playoffs. So that was really amazing for him. He also was PGA Tour rookie medalist at Q School. And he finished up on the bubble of the PGA Tour money list, 125. So that was a really great day for him. We have nationwide tour player Rob Oppenheim calling in. Rob, how are you?
Hey, Liza, how you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, no problem.
So I hear that you're in the second stage of PGA Tour qualifying school this week.
Correct. Yeah, I'm here in Orlando and just getting ready. I'm leaving tomorrow, heading to Brooksville, about an hour and a half from where I'm at. And a course called Southern Hills starts on Wednesday. So I'll be heading down, take a practice round Monday, Tuesday.
All right. So how do you think you're going to do? Obviously, well, of course.
You know, the Q School is tough. It's a grind. I think this is my ninth year going. So I've been there a bunch. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I had a different year. This is my first year on the nationwide tour. So I played, it was a different year for me, traveling and playing, gets better competition. So I'm looking forward to Q School. But, it's there's so much competition and, it's 1 week and, I feel prepared, though, and hopefully the puff will fall and it'll be a good week.
I saw in the list of who's playing at the course, there's some amazing competition that you have there.
Oh, yeah, the list of players, past champions on the PGA Tour, and, it's a lot of good competition, a lot of good players, and you got to play well. There's about 80 guys or so, and the top 20 in ties will, around there, give or take, will advance to the finals. And, the finals is here in Orlando at Orange County National, so I'd be able to stay in my own bed. So that'd be nice to play Q School, stay at your own place would be nice. So hopefully I can get through. That'd be perfect.
Do you think that some of the competition, the stiffer it is, do you think it makes you play better? Spurns you on to play better?
That's what I learned playing out there in Nationwide. You can't afford to make the mistakes. And, playing out there all year, I think it does sharpen your skills. Playing against better competition, you have to. You're forced. If you don't play to a higher level, you'll miss cuts or, you won't survive. So it does. I think just like when you're in a group with guys and they're making birdies, I think it helps you make birdies as well. And I think, you definitely do spur each other on.
Now, the travel for the nationwide tour, I know you said that you traveled a lot this year. Did you get acclimated to that? I know that you traveled a lot for the mini tours that you played on, but nationwide's probably more.
Yeah, we started the year in Australia and went to New Zealand. And, it was fun. It was a great experience, and I definitely enjoyed it. But it was played the last 16 events in a row, and we played 16 last 17 weeks, so I was on the road quite a bit. It was fun. It was tiring, but, you can't afford to really miss a week. Being on the money list, your position is so important, and you're always trying to get in that top 25 so you can secure your PGA Tour card. And being my first year out there, I really couldn't afford to take a week off. And it was tiring, but you have an opportunity out there every week, and I enjoy playing golf. You never know which week will be your week where the putts fall. So I got a couple weeks off the last 2 weeks, so now I'm getting ready for Q School.
Well, tell me a little bit about the Nationwide Tour Championship at Daniel Island. You finished up, I think, ninth or 11th?
11th, yeah.
All right, 11th.
If I finished ninth, I think I would have been able to get in the top 40, which would have got me straight to final. So it was close, but it was a great course, great experience. I was kind of had a chance. I was not only a chance to win, but a chance to have a pretty good finish. And I shot one over the last day, which kind of dropped me back a little bit. But every week's a good learning experience, and it was fun because if you come in the top two in that event, it was such a big purse that you would have got your tour card. And
I know I was rooting for you. I thought that you could pull it off. You must have been pretty excited with your finish, though. That's really a good finish, anyway.
Well, thanks.
So let me think what else we can talk about before I let you you go. You know, what event that you played on the Nationwide Tour this past year was your favorite event that you felt like you did the best you could and you were very satisfied?
Yeah, I think the big event for me was in Jacksonville. It was the last event before the Tour Championship, and I was 59th on the money list, and the top 60 have to get into the finals and keep your full staff for next year. So I had quite a bit of pressure going on into that event where, you know, if I missed the cut, I would have lost full staff for next year. And, to have a good week there, I had a chance to kind of to win going down the stretch. I was tied for second going last hole. If I made a birdie in the last hole, I would have forced a playoff. Unfortunately, I made bogey and, you know, ended up tying for fifth. But it was, that was the first time I really, you know, going into the few holes to go, I had a chance to kind of, a few things went my way, I had a chance to win. And so that was exciting. And, you know, it was in Jacksonville. My father was there. My girlfriend came down and a lot of friends were there. So that was probably the most special event for me this year. And it was nice to play well when I had to, and friends and family there. It was fun.
Yeah, so I think those last two events probably gave you a lot of confidence going into Q School this coming up week, hope.
Yeah, no, it's hard to say you're looking forward to Q School because it's I am. You know, it's going to be, it's nice. I've never last, you know, every time I've gone to Q School in the past, I've kind of was playing with no security. I didn't know what I was going to do. If I didn't get through the second stage, I kind of was back to the main tours trying to Monday qualify for the Nationwide. So this is the first time I'm going into Q School with having staff in the Nationwide for next year. So it's a little less pressure, but hopefully can, you know, like I said, get through the second stage and then get to play Orange County National Finals. Of course, I know pretty well and sleep in my own bed, all that stuff. Well,
yeah. So. Did you have a caddy recently that you've been using? Someone that was playing on the mini tours? I can't think of his name.
Yeah, John Conley.
John.
John's a great guy, good friend. He played on the Nationwide Tour a few years. He played up in New England with me, the New England Tour, played all the state opens up there, and I got really lucky to get him. I owe a lot of thanks to him for the end. I had a pretty good stretch at the end. I think he had a lot to do with that. He's a great guy. Do you know John?
I don't know him personally. I've met him a few times, you know, at some events, and I know that he plays really well.
Great player, yeah, and he he's helped me out a lot.
All right, well, do you think you might be using him for your Q School experience this week?
He's right here with me right now. We played today, and he'll be with me.
All right. Well, good luck to both of you, and I wish you well. And we'll just continue to follow your progress.
All right.
And when you get your card, you better come on my show again.
No problem.
Thank you so much, Rob.
All right. Thank you.
All right. My next guest this evening is Boston, New England sports anchor for Comcast Sportsnet, Kevin Walsh. Kevin has written a book called The Marrow in Me. November is Bone Marrow Awareness Month, if you don't know. Kevin's book is golf related because the main character in the book had leukemia, and he found some inspiration when he was at a driving range and picked up a certain golf ball which had a logo on it. So Kevin will probably tell us all about that. So is Kevin on the line, Larry?
I'm with you, Liza.
Hey, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing great. Love the show. Glad to be on it.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Well, let me tell you about the golf ball story because it is the greatest golf story that I've ever been a part of, I've ever told, I've ever written about. Years ago, when I was a young news anchor and reporter in Honolulu, Hawaii, I covered the story of a man named Chris Pablo. Chris was diagnosed with chronic myelogenous leukemia. And 3 weeks after he was diagnosed with leukemia, he went to hit some golf balls at the driving range. He got about halfway through his basket, and there was one ball that was in the basket. You know the cruddy ball that usually finds its way into the basket of all the look-alike balls, but there's that one ball, and you know somebody just took a ball out of their bag and just wanted one more swing? Well, that ball was right in the middle of the bunch, and something about it just compelled him to bend down and take a closer look at it. And instead of rolling it out onto the mat and whacking it away like the other balls, he plucked it out and was just looking at the ball. He turned the ball on its side, and he saw the words, "Beat Leukemia," stamped on the side of the ball. Now, this is, I think a golfer gets it immediately. How does that ball find its way into his basket with a message that's exactly specific to the medical condition he has at the time? It is, for non-golfers, it is absolutely finding the needle in the haystack. Together, we told his story to the public in Honolulu, and ultimately, we found him a life-saving, perfect bone marrow match in a man who had no legs. Now, how that ball found its way in his basket, God only knows, but it's almost like he may have plucked it out, but he didn't find the ball. The ball found him.
Definitely. What did he say to you when he saw the message on the ball? Did it send a chill through him or anything?
Yeah, it absolutely
you know what I mean?
Did, because prior to that, he was 3 weeks really removed from a death sentence. He couldn't find find a match within his family or anywhere else. So he really knew, unless some kind of a miracle presented itself, he was going to die. And he was only 45 years old at the time, had a young family, and a lot to live for. But in finding such a miraculous find in a basket, he just, in his own heart, felt like, you know, maybe there's a bigger purpose for me. Maybe this is the godsend and the hope that I need to help me to persevere and find my match. And ultimately, it was. We lost Chris. This was back in 1995. He had his transplant a year after he found the ball. He died just this past year. But he got 15 more good years because, really, that golf ball became like a tipping point and educated the Honolulu community about what leukemia was and how it might be cured through bone marrow transplant. And his story was just so compelling because when you told his story about his incredible find, I've had so many people tell me just when I share the story of what happened to him that day, they get the chills because you couldn't, even if you tried to make up a story, you couldn't make it up as compelling and as profound as that. And it's all true.
Now, the stat from that golf ball find, how many donors came forward and how many people were saved?
That golf ball started a revolution because he was such a sad story. His story just had all the elements. It had the sadness. Well, here's a poor guy that just got a death sentence. He has everything to live for, but it's being taken away. Then God throws a miracle in his basket and gives him hope. But we still need to do our part and maybe sign up, and maybe we could be the one that could save his life. And a couple other people came into the storyline as well. There was a little girl that also had leukemia who kind of piggybacked on Chris Pablo's story, but ultimately 30,000 people over the course of a month came out to an arena. The crush of people was so big trying to save these people's lives and give a sample of blood that they had to rent out an arena to handle the volume of people that were coming. 30,000 people rolled up their sleeves, gave a sample of blood, and of those 30,000, there were 86 people that matched and went to transplant. And just as faith, luck, miracles would happen, here I am, the reporter covering the story, encouraging people to come out. I gave a sample of blood myself that day. 4 years later, I get a call out of the blue that I've turned up as a match for a 16-year-old boy with leukemia. So if you go back to the beginning, the storyteller somehow got sucked into the storyline.
You have a personal site, KevinWalshOnline.com. You can see about your book, The Marrow in Me. And also, you have a YouTube channel, Kevin Walsh TV, and that's where it shows you giving your donation of bone marrow.
That's true, because, you know, working on TV, I kind of felt a little uncomfortable about it because, you know, usually as journalists, you're supposed to just be the storytellers and let the subjects, they're the important stuff. And it wasn't because I tried to manufacture it in any way. I just somehow, as faith, luck, whatever would have it, I became a part of the story, and we documented it for the TV stations I was working for at the time, and really showed people from beginning to end what it takes to be a bone marrow donor. So it shows me going to the hospital, being put under anesthesia, doctors drilling into my hip and sucking the bone marrow out. And I think, you know, the thing that in writing the book, The Marrow in Me, and the story that I like to share with everybody else is, as much as people say, well, that was a very nice thing that you did, you went through a very difficult and painful thing to help somebody you didn't know, what a gift for you to give. The thing for me is, it was such a gift coming back to me, because I got to tell you, Liza, when you find out that you're the only person in the world that can help somebody, just being the only one at something, so long as it's good, you just feel so special and so blessed. And that's how I felt, to be a part of something that was certainly bigger than who I was and what I did. It was a time in my life I was so grateful to have the chance. My only regret is that we didn't have the perfect ending that we had all hoped for.
Can you tell me a little bit about, November is National Bone Marrow Awareness Month?
Well, it's just, you know, it's one of those months, like we just got through Breast Cancer Awareness
right.
Month in October, and it's another one of those months where it's time to stroke the public's interest about what's going on around them. And it's a time where major bone marrow registries are trying to pad the numbers and get more people on board. There, at last check, there are 7 million people who are registered as a potential donor. Now, Liza, you could be a match for someone somewhere in the world. You are a match for someone somewhere in the world. It's just a question, would you ever be registered, and would that person ever get sick? And I'm telling you, for somebody that's been down that road, to get that phone call out of the blue that you've matched somebody, it is the most powerful thing that you could ever imagine. It just reduced me to tears and made me just feel so humbled and so blessed. And I'll tell you this, it's a lot easier, as much as one of the first questions people asked me when they found out I did it, they almost asked me the question in the form of a statement. They say, well, I know that really hurts, doesn't it? And I'm like, well,
I've heard.
Well, not exactly, because number one, when you're actually making, when the doctors are extracting the bone marrow out of your bones, you're under anesthesia, so you don't feel it. You wake up a little bit sore. But it's a lot easier just to register. When I did it 15 years ago, they actually had to take blood. So look, you're going to get poked one way or another with a needle, and that freaks people out. I get it. I'm freaked out by needles too, but I'm not so scared that I won't do it. But now you can do it with a simple cheek swab. You can just take a cheek swab, you put it in an envelope, you send it off to the National Marrow Donor Program, and then you're in a registry for life. So look at it this way, Liza. You just take a cheek swab, send it off. Your information is there forever. Somebody gets sick, they put in their information, bloop, there's a hit in the computer. Well, who's this Liza lady? Let's find her. Oh, there she is in suburban Boston. Let's call her up and let her know that she may have a chance to do something that's bigger than who she is and life itself. And that's what happened. And when you can eliminate the needle in the very beginning, a lot more people want to take a bite at it.
I think so, too. I'm over the whole needle fear, the fear of needles, but when I was younger, it was really bad.
I'm the same way. I'm still a regular blood donor, and I see that thing coming at me, and it scares me, but I'm not. Here's the thing. I'm not so afraid that I won't do it, and my conscience is just guilty enough that if I don't do it, I'll feel bad.
Right.
So I just go ahead and do it and just hang on. And look, I'm still living and doing well, so something's working.
Well, I just want to say, in speaking to you, Kevin, for people in your position, you know, in the media and in the public eye, I know you've had many broadcasting jobs. You're very down to earth and humble and very, you know, you don't find that a lot in people in the public eye.
Thank you. That means a lot. I've had a very good life. I've had some just incredible breaks in my life, but I've had some incredible moments where I was humbled. This is a job that can really make you feel good about yourself and then just make you feel very humbled very quickly, and sometimes all on the same day. And eating humble pie is good for everybody. Nobody volunteers for it, but if you've ever lost a job or had bad breaks before, once you kind of get through the initial shock of it, if you're strong enough and you think positively, you usually get through it. And I have. And so, look, I live every day like it's a good day, because there are others that have had far greater struggles than I'll ever have.
Once again, if you're interested in the Marrow in Me, and November is National Bone Marrow Awareness Month, go to kevinwalshonline.com. Now, Kevin, you cover other sports in Boston other than golf. What do you think of the Boston fans and the sports in New England here?
Boston is, and I'm not just doing this to suck up to your listeners, Boston is the greatest sports city in America, and just take that from me, because I've been everywhere else, so I have something I can compare it to. There is no greater place as far as success, as far as history, and as far as culture. It's just not something that we do and watch on TV and read about in the paper and listen to on the radio. It's a way of life, and the difference between Boston and, say, New York, Philadelphia, or Chicago, which are great sports towns too, is everybody's in it here. The women, the children, everybody. So there's no better place. Believe me, I've been everywhere else. If you're looking for a better spot, you're wasting your time. It's all here. Enjoy it.
I think so, too. Now, you cover, say, the Celtics, Bruins, Patriots, New England Revolution. Do you have a favorite, or do you just like them all?
I like them all, but, well, really, hockey is my favorite. Just because of the passion. Because hockey, like golf, it's more than a game. It's a culture, and you get that. It's
yeah.
Like when you know somebody that's in the golf, we instantly bond and we can talk about stuff. And because it's not just the game, it's the social interaction, how it makes us feel about life and not just the game itself. And you get that with hockey. You get just good, honest people. Sure, they'll drop the gloves and beat the crap out of each other every now and then. But at the end of the day, they have a respect for one another, and they have a respect for the game. And I went to the Bruins game last night as a fan for, usually when I'm going, I'm working, but I went just as a fan, and I guess I picked the wrong game to go because they didn't really show up last night. But I just love hockey. I love basketball. I love football. And the fact that I can be on TV and talk about sports and somebody is willing to pay me to do it, it's such a bonus. We get paid to play.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, it probably just doesn't even, when you love something so much like covering sports, it's not even like work.
I can go back to when I was in college. I was a business major, and I was playing for Purdue and was thinking about a possible life on the PGA Tour. And then I realized that I just didn't have quite the passion for that. I thought I had the game for it, but if you're not all in, I mean, you can talk with Rob Oppenheimer, anybody else, and you know these golfers better than I do, Liza. If you're not all in, you're wasting your time. So I started thinking about life elsewhere and how I could make a living. And I remember this one professor who said, find something you like to do and get paid for it, because then it won't seem like work. And he had been a professor for almost 50 years. And he said, I could have made more money doing something else. He said, but it's never felt like work coming in. And that's the difference. And you know what? That's what made me pursue a career in broadcasting, because I thought it would be something I might be good at. But I knew it was something that I could love, because it had speaking elements and writing stuff. And God bless that man, because his words stick with me today. And I've passed on the same advice that he gave me years ago to everybody else that I know.
Yeah, that's the best advice ever. Listen, we're just about out of time, but why don't you tell my listeners when you're on Comcast Sportsnet? I don't know your schedule.
Okay, well, the schedule is this. I'm on Tuesday through Saturday. You can catch me live on the air, Comcast Sportsnet Central, 10:30 and 1 a.m. They're both live shows. The 1 a.m. show repeats, like, constantly the next morning. So if you have Comcast, and I'm sure most people do, if you don't have it, get it. But you can also see it on some of the other providers. It is the best way to describe what Sportsnet Central is. It's like ESPN SportsCenter Lite, but it's just more Boston and New England related teams. So if you are a sports junkie, that is absolutely your Home Depot, your grocery store. It's all there.
All right, Kevin. Well, I want to thank you so much for calling in, and check out Kevin's book, The Marrow in Me. Go to KevinWalshOnline.com. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks so much. Look forward to seeing you. Let's play golf sometime.
Definitely.
Okay?
You're listening to Goldie Bounce Golf on 95.9 WATD. I'm your host, Liza Churchill. Up next, it's week two of golf strength and conditioning coach Michelle Anderson's 13-week golf fitness segment. Michelle's the owner of Pilates Plus of Cape Cod and Dennis. You can check out her website at PilatesPlusOfCapeCod.com. And here's Michelle.
You're not fit.
We just want to pop your
until you're golf fit.
Here's a killer chest workout you can do at home. All you need is a cheap set of dumbbells and a carpeted floor.
It's your golf fitness tip of the week.
One. Yeah. Be strong. Think strong.
With Michelle Anderson of Pilates Plus of Cape Cod.
Hello again, this is Michelle, second week of our 13-week golf conditioning program. I hope you've been practicing your ab crunch, ab curl, and doing them correctly. If you are, you should be feeling some changes already. So last week we did the ab curl, which focuses on the abdominal muscles for your golf swing and lengthening the spine, and that's a movement in spinal flexion. Today we're going to work on a back strengthener. It's spinal extension. So throughout this program, we're going to try to move your spine in every single direction. So the back strengthener strengthens the trunk muscles to assist the rotational action throughout the golf swing. These are all the little muscles that travel up and down your spine. It develops torso strength, which helps improve posture, provides midsection stability, and helps facilitate lower back injury prevention. To get started, I'm going to have you go onto your mat, laying right on the floor on your stomach. So laying on your stomach, bring your hands, palms down, right under your armpits, so your hands and your elbows are on the mat. Now relax your forehead into the floor. Relax your legs. Remember that breathing. Take a really big inhale into your ribs. Exhale every last drop of air out of the lungs, pulling your belly button in and up. See if you can pull your belly button right up off the floor. On your next inhale, gently arch your spine up, raising your heart, your chest off the floor. Keep your face down so your neck stays long. As you exhale, lower your chest back down onto the mat. And then again, inhale, arching up. Roll your shoulder blades back and down. Nice long neck, and exhale to release. Do 8 more repetitions of this movement. After you've completed the 8 repetitions, come up onto your hands and knees and sit your bottom down right on your heels. Keep your arms stretched forward and try to lower your head onto the mat. This is child's pose stretch, if you're familiar with that name. Holding this stretch, breathe into your ribs, breathe into your back. Exhale, relax all the muscles in your body. Try to lower your sits bones towards your heels. 2 more deep breaths, and you can round back up. This exercise can also be performed over the ball. When you go to the YouTube channel or any of the Goldie Bounce golf media to watch the videos, we will show you the ball movement as well. Now coming up to your feet, we'll do 1 more stretch for your spine. Standing nice and tall, bring your feet together right under your inner hip joints. Toes are pointing straight forward. Arms relax by your side. Twisting, turn to your right. Let the arms flow freely. Turn all the way to your left. Turn your head, even your eyes. Look out the corner of your eye behind you. Keep turning side to side. Picking up the speed, your arms will float out to the sides. Keep breathing. Feel your spine. There might be a section of your spine where it's a little harder for the spine to rotate. You might have a little pain. Just keep twisting freely. Try to twist without any muscle tension. And eventually, if you twist long enough, your spine will start to move freely and all that back pain will go away. Please feel free to contact me directly with any questions whatsoever at PilatesPlusOfCapeCod.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope to see you next week.
Tune in to Goldie Bounce Golf Live, heard every Sunday night at 6:30 exclusively on 95.9 WATD.